cryptocurrency, DeFi, NFTs? Sounds confusing? BitLab Academy is here to help. We make it simple. Start investing in crypto, learn trading fundamentals, learn to mint and trade NFTs. Join our community today. Crypto for beginners, taught by the pros.
Welcome to Rice TVX.
You've just tuned in for the latest transmission of Stranger Than Fiction. And joining me on today's show is Beth Martins. She is a fellow content creator, truth seeker, and she's been on the show before. Gonna have a link in the video description and above for her first appearance. Today's conversation is gonna be revolving around all things legal fiction, the law versus legal world, the private domain, and much more.
Before we get into it, visit ricetvx.com and sign up for my mailing list so you never miss an update or new Rice TVX content. You will also find my various social media links and more. You can also find Rice TVX on Odyssey and Library, where I have a full catalog of my videos, post up extra content, and share other appearances. And you can also find Rice TVX on BitChute. I've partnered up with My Patriot Supply so that you can prepare for these uncertain times. Visit www.prepwithrice.com. I highly recommend My Patriot Supply, America's largest emergency preparedness company. Act quickly and you'll save $150 off their essential 3-month emergency food kit, which contains an abundance of delicious foods that provides more than 2,000 calories a day. This includes free shipping quickly and in unmarked boxes to your doorstep. Visit www.prepwithrice.com as an additional way to support the channel. I will include links in the video description for everything I just mentioned, as well as everything shared on today's video.
Joining me on today's show is Beth Martins. She is a fellow content creator and much more. She has been on the show before. I will include a link down below in the video description for her first appearance, as well as my two appearances over on her podcast. I'm going to have links for everything that we talk about on today's show, and I definitely encourage you to check out that first conversation so you can learn a little bit more about who Beth is without us having to repeat ourselves from that first conversation. And that was August 1st, 2021. We're recording this on July 27th. It's going to be getting released Monday, which will be the 1st of August. It'll be on my Patreon channel tonight for early access. So Beth, welcome back to the channel. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. I can't believe it's been a year.
And you know, I can't believe you've only been on once. For some reason, I thought you had been on at least twice, and I was going back through and saw it was only that one time. So I'm glad that you reached out to me. I want to play catch up and talk about what you've been up to, what you're currently doing, and then I got a few questions for you, and then I definitely want to be able to bring you back. I was even thinking about the idea of you and Matthew Belair were doing podcasts together, interviewing people in the legal fiction, law, legal world. I would like to do some similar things, not like a whole series, but certain people who we vibe with, who we find more validity in their teachings and what they're talking about. I would like to do almost like a roundtable interview where we could tag team on some things if you're interested. And if you are, we could talk about that more privately.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. That was the Choose Freedom Law Summit. And I'm going to go back really soon now and vet a bunch of those interviews. So definitely, we'll catch up about that.
Since you said that, can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, 2 years down the rabbit hole or more, how long into the pandemic? I guess we're going into our third year now. And, doing a number of interviews, I think I did 211 interviews in the 2 years, and many law focused and the Choose Freedom Law Summit. And so I actually came to some conclusions, Chris. It's a miracle. I never thought I would go to bed with a question mark in my head. I would wake up with a question mark in my head. So many different directions to go in, and now I feel actually really solid about the conclusions I've drawn from all of that. And definitely a vetting process at this point, because there's lots I'm not done with.
Well, you okay? Well, you're being really PC about it, and I'm trying not to be. And I told you before, I had went through kind of a burnout with information overload, lack of evidence, and all this stuff with the legal fiction, and kind of took a break. That was last year. I've done a few interviews on the subject this year. I'm in the midst of kind of a slowdown where I'm about to start picking back up in a few more weeks, and I plan on kind of digging my feet in the ground and doing more interviews, trying to find out more validity, but really going for proof and solutions. So, I mean, there's in this, it sucks because you talk to somebody and they make sense. And then you start to let that video kind of marinate for a few months. And then you get a bunch of comments telling you that maybe that individual is scamming people. Maybe that individual is putting out false information on purpose, and it's been called out, and there's a lot of information to back that up. Controlled opposition, egotistical individuals who think that their shit doesn't stink and they know everything. Would that kind of encompass a lot of that?
Yes, absolutely. You nailed it, because there can be the outright deception and, you know, controlled op. It's a huge spectrum where people are maybe just, you know, opportunists, and they're looking for a way to, it could be, you know, make a buck or get an audience, which is usually making a buck, all the way to them being well aware of taking people sideways. And right. So there's been, you know, tons of controlled op in my world coming in, trying to get my attention. You know, it's always suspicious when they come after me for an interview, although I did that with you. So you might suspect me now. But
no, I don't. Like, you're one of the few people that I actually admire with the way that you're doing things. You, Observation Deck. There's a few channels out there, and I know I'm not naming all the ones that I respect, but there are people out there who have a good head on their shoulders and aren't getting sucked in by the Kool-Aid. The best way I can put it. That's me being PC, and it's not really PC at all. But
yeah, exactly. That Kool-Aid. Oh, I tell you, it comes in a lot of flavors, and they made up a huge batch for us. It's easy to predict. There's going to be a certain percentage of the population who drinks all the Kool-Aid, and then another percent of the population that are willing to look at some harder stuff and go through cognitive dissonance, but sucked in at other levels. So it's kind of a, can I swear, shit show?
Yeah, you totally can. I make sure that I check on the YouTube's video description information. It's not made for children. So if some parent is allowing their kids to watch this, that's their fault. I mean, at the same time, I think they would be educated, but I'm not going to sit here and hold back how I communicate. And if I need to use the word fuck to emphasize something, I most definitely will. Most definitely will. So I really encourage people to go over to your YouTube channel. I noticed today when I pulled up your YouTube channel, it had me unsubscribe. So I had to resubscribe right before the interview.
That happens all the time.
It happens to me all the time too. It's even happened on my own accounts, like other YouTube accounts that I have that are unsubscribed from not the same account, but me subscribed to my own YouTube channel with another account and it gets unsubscribed.
Mm-hmm. If people
go over to your YouTube channel and just type in Rice, but I'll have these linked down below, you could find the conversations that we did together. So I would encourage, actually, no, it's just, one of them I think is on your King's Hero podcast website.
Yeah, sure. The second one that you did with us, with Matt and myself, is in the Choose Freedom Law Summit, which is, you know, in the private, not in the private domain, just in, you know, as a more of a membership kind of thing, but not a private membership like what we're going to talk about.
Right.
And so if you want access to that interview, then I think we'd be happy to lay it on you if you want to share it on your channel or anything like that.
Maybe I'll put it on my Patreon. That way it still kind of remains in a private and it's not in a public forum and people can still enjoy it. I try to put some extra content over there, so that would be cool. And then I'll have links also for your website, which will include links for the King Hero podcast and the Choose Freedom Law Summit if people are interested in checking that out. And we talked all about that the first time we got together. I wanted to ask you, the primal power, God's law. I noticed that. Is that something new since we had talked last?
Yeah, it was a new version, new edition of it. So it was a course that I created right after the pandemic hit, because I knew that people such as you and I had specific hurdles we were going to run into. And then the God's Law edition came after I became well acquainted with Jacqueline Milne. I'm still a huge fan of her because I'm going to, you'll see me also probably bring her name up several times. We worked together intensely. She came as my client and student. And then I flipped it and just went, oh my gosh, you have so much to share. I need to have you for one interview. That turned into two interviews and probably five interviews. And she always got in very, opportune times to give a very important message, specifically about the private domain, of which she is an expert in. And that's who I've been learning all of my stuff from. She also has an incredible knowledge of the Bible. She's a self-proclaimed survivor of a dangerous personality cult. And after getting out of that, she went into the Bible, without any doctrine, no religion, no direction from anybody, and just studied what was there. And what she discovered was the same thing that I discovered.
Are they coming for you?
Yeah, they're coming for me. They always are. Okay. They're right across the street. So I saved them a trip.
Sorry.
That's okay. I know. Sorry about that. Yeah, sometimes I mute that. But where was I going to go with that?
We were talking about the
God's Law. Yeah.
The God's Law edition, the primal power.
Right. So I invited her to teach this course with me, because what she finds in the Bible, a Fibonacci sequence, a repeating pattern, a very reliable pattern that can be followed like a map. It's the exact same thing I do with the archetypes to map the inner life, to make it not such a wall of like, oh, I know I'm stuck, but it's just a grand mystery. And so the Bible and archetypes are both decoding tools. So I brought her in to bring the Bible element that, I'm kind of a self-proclaimed born again. I was born again as a child, and it was actually through the law that I came back to the Bible and the Christian teachings. I don't have any affiliation whatsoever, although I have now created a ministry. As you know, that's what the House of Free Will is.
Which is going to be the main topic of today's conversation. I just want to do a little catch up before we got there, because I think a lot of the things that you've been doing obviously since the last time we talked have kind of led up to that, as you've kind of indicated. And I did write down Jacqueline's name. Her private domain is called her private domain, which is a PMA, private membership association, is the Four Cornered Table, right?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. We'll make sure I got that right. I try to take some good notes.
Okay, fantastic.
Try my best. So I already had her name written down because I was going to ask what her influence was, which we'll get into. We'll totally get into that. Let me see real quick if there was anything else that I wanted to dive into with the catch-up stuff.
Mm-hmm. Primal Power, by the way, is a walk through five archetypes that are always very present. They're universal. They are basically either inviting you to life or threatening you with death. And so it's a very stark place to meet yourself, but it's also a really great takeoff point to reclaim energy that is lost and to truly sit in our power, not to be, raging against the machine and think that's power, or holier than thou, think I'm so great and better than you, therefore that's power, but real true power that comes from the source.
Okay. I like that. I do. That's good. All right. So you've been mentioning, we mentioned Jacqueline, how she's influenced what you're doing. You guys have worked together with this Primal Power God's Law Edition series, educational series. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, it was a course. Exactly. A study course. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And that kind of led you into creating your own PMA, Private Membership Association, being the House of Free Will. It's a ministry where mastery meets miracles. And you can find this on BethMartins.com's channel. Now, what I wanted to check out are your actual website. I can't communicate for whatever reason. Is there? I don't see anything from the main site unless I scroll down. Okay, here it is. Apply to be a member. So this will take you to this particular link that I'm sharing now.
Exactly.
So what led you ultimately? And I know there's a a lot of information that explains this, and I could have read it and not asked you the question, but I did read it, and I still want to ask you the question because I think it's good for people because not everybody's going to read it. So do you mind explaining the purpose behind the House of Free Will Ministry?
Yes, absolutely. So as I talked about, you know, doing so many interviews in law and just feeling determined, I didn't want to study law. It was not my favorite subject. I never wanted to go near it at all. But, you know, when things got so outrageous, and Canada in particular, if you've been watching what's going on here, it's just turned into such a regime, like really brutal, evil regime.
Chinadia or whatever people are calling it.
Yeah. Although it's debatable whether we should call it that, because that's playing into their agenda that we think of ourselves as a communist country when it's the deal is not done yet. But, you know, just looking, okay, what are the actual solutions? Like you said earlier, you're going to focus on who's getting results and not just sounding good and, you know, making sense, but truly actually doing something real in the world that's going to serve, you know, not just us as individuals, but humanity as a whole, because we are in fact facing an extinction event. And that's not just like the climate change fear porn going on there. There's, you know, it's a genocide. That's what's absolutely happening as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, trying to separate the wheat from the chaff and all of those characters and figures and the shows and, you know, just leading people. Most people were giving a lot of good knowledge, but then in very important ways would take people sideways. And one of the primary ways that they take people sideways is in hiding the private domain, right? So the private versus the public. There are actually archetypes. I just gave a talk at an Acapulco about this, looking at the archetypes of the public and the private, which are really cool because that's where I started with all my work. And so they represent something that exists in nature, which is the predator and the prey. And the nature inside of ourself also very much in alignment with the masculine and feminine archetypes. So, you know, a lot of the freedom movement wanted to kill the public. And especially in the law world, they would say, oh, you know, the court system, it's evil. It's the devil's playground. If you go in there, you know, you're sunk and you shouldn't touch it. And I actually got completely demonized by one of my very good friends throughout this whole thing. As soon as I interviewed Dr. Frederick Graves, who created the jurisdictionary course. And as soon as I did that, I was like, I was out. I was considered satanic.
What's the guy's name?
Dr. Frederick Graves created the jurisdictionary course.
Is that the course that Alphonse recommends?
Yeah, how to win in court. Exactly.
Frederick Graves?
Yes, and he would love to be interviewed if you're interested.
Yeah, and that was going to be part of my question, was talking about the people that you've interviewed, which we'll get into after we talk about everything dealing with your PMA.
Yes, okay.
I want to focus good. And the reason is I'm going to be doing something slightly similar, and I'll be putting more information. I mean, I've kind of hinted at doing more things in the private. I do a regular ongoing series with a guy named Ethan Lucas.
Mm-hmm. You have caught some of that.
Has he been on your show? No,
he has not.
Okay.
No.
So, and he's a smart guy, but, and we don't necessarily agree 100% on everything, the spirituality of law series. And so the correlation, I'm kind of getting off track with what I was even bringing up the series for. But the spiritual aspect of all of this is real. Okay, I'm getting, now it's coming back. The spiritual aspect is really important. But one of the things I started coming to the conclusion of, because of censorship and having to be more careful and playing a better game of chess with YouTube so that I'm not getting my videos deleted and I continue promoting these ideas. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of being like how Jesus was in the Bible, in the Gospels, where in the public, Jesus spoke in parables, didn't speak very plainly. But in the private, he would explain things to his disciples very clearly. So in a lot of aspects, being in the public, you kind of have to do that. And going into the private allows for that true freedom. And then the PMA aspect, the Private Membership Association, does have some protection involved with that. So, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. Yeah. So good. And that really truly is the nature of the private and the purpose of the private. If you look at it biblically, since I've learned to see the private domain in the Bible, thanks to Jacqueline, I may never have seen it on my own, to tell you the truth, because we're so brainwashed, we're so indoctrinated. The words public and private are problematic. There's so many ways that they have stolen, I mean, a lot of words, but private in particular. So for an example, what you were just saying, you know, taking something, say, into Patreon or behind a paywall or whatever it is where the, you know, the general public can't see it, we call that private. But that's not truly private. If there's one symbol that is very, very, poignant in describing the private, it's the household. And the church is also a name for that, but the church got abused. And now we think about that as like, you know, a structure and an organization, but it's truly the, you know, where your kin are. And Jesus says, I'm not sure where in the Bible he says this, but that your mother and your father are those that are close to you. It's not your biological father and mother and brothers and sisters, but it's your family. Like I would happily host you in my household, Chris. You know, we're kin. And we think alike. We have, you know, similar goals. We can keep our eye on the target. What's going on here? And we want to work together to create what we could never create on our own. And it is the domain of freedom, absolutely. Because, you know, for one small example, when the police come to your door, they know full well they can't come in your house without your permission.
Or a warrant.
Or a warrant from a judge with probable cause, exactly, the one thing that can override that private domain. And we just don't know about it. So people will invite them right in. And the pandemic has been revealing in, you know, say, for example, when you come and try to cross the border, they start asking you all kinds of questions about your household. When I was quarantined coming back from New York a couple of years ago, I bust the border getting out. They didn't mind me coming in, but getting back was a little harder. And they started asking me all kinds of questions. And even when I got home, about my private domain. So the woman calls me and she's literally checking up to see if I'm actually quarantining. And she asks me, where do I take out the garbage? I say, well, outside. And I shouldn't have been answering any questions at that point, but I didn't know. And she goes, oh, well, you can't take the garbage out for 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's stupid. And she's like, yeah, you're right. But it's an example of how they're trying to meddle in the private world of the living men and women, right? And, you know, most of our lives is actually in the private, but because we haven't been taught to distinguish this as a real thing, we don't notice it.
Right.
And it's probably the reason that civilization has not yet collapsed. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, when you were talking about people don't understand the difference between private and public, really, a lot of that I think has to do with ethics. In the United States, I feel like we used to teach this information, but it got faded out, especially when the education system kind of got taken over by entities with agendas.
Boom.
So I feel like these things used to be taught to people. And since you're even bringing it up, I have a lot of questions when it comes to that. Now, I agree, when it comes to a website and having a paywall doesn't really make you private, because mm-hmm. it's open to invitation to anybody. Whereas if you have a PMA that's in physical, a physical kind of situation, you can limit who can and can't be present or participate, which gives you that more elements of privacy. But to give you a good example of where some of the confusion is, speakeasies, like a place that would operate selling alcohol outside of the jurisdiction of the area, whether it's serving after set hours or not using the ABC store or following their protocols. I've not seen very many situations where people run these things that get busted that come out on the winning side. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So that's been one of the things in this journey that I want to try to get some more clarity on, is what kind of protections do we truly get for having like a PMA and being in the private, if let's say, law enforcement officers, policy pushers want to come in and make a ruckus, you know, whether everything gets dropped or not, it still can be very detrimental to what you're doing, especially if it continues to happen. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen any situations where people are running something privately that has effectively worked and maybe have dealt with some legal problems and have been able to be successful in their endeavors?
You know, because it's relatively new, except that it's got a very long history, like you said, you know, people used to, like, all of health and education and people's basic needs and fellowship was all handled. You know, hospitals used to be run by the churches. You know, the private domain was not a, you know, like a mystery. It was, that was how most of civilization would run. And then the public element was a much smaller, you know, when you look at the balance between predator and prey in nature, that predator element is relatively small compared to the prey, creatures or animals or however you want to call that.
Right.
Yeah. Which they can flip. They can be both predator and prey. And there's a ton of misunderstandings. And just because you said it now, like that, even, you know, because you have to apply to be part of my ministry. Like you said, someone has to answer some specific questions. I tried to keep them like not super intense questions for just a general membership. Oh, no,
they're super invasive. I mean, you're asking about people's underwear sizes and
yeah, exactly. Yeah, not for the first tier, but there might be asking about underwear deeper down. But that in and of itself won't also make a private domain like lawfully private domain association. But what does make it you know, foolproof? Because, you know, I have examples of some that are falling through now. And what's happening is that they have taken their public life, say their public business, and then they have swapped it into the private, is what they're calling it. So they think that it, you know, it's going to make protections. They won't need licenses. They won't have to pay taxes. They won't have all of those, you know, public things lording over them and regulating them. Now that is actually largely true as a side effect, but it should not ever be the purpose that you create the private association. The purpose of creating a private association is to serve the needs of the people. Right? Is that it's greater than yourself. It, you know, for a business, you have to really be concerned with your own bottom line, because you're not in business if you don't pay your bills and you can't continue their things. And you know, we're all indoctrinated to that. So that's, I was born and raised in a business world. I have a business mind, and that I'm very quickly learning the difference here. Now, luckily, when I was, and this will go back to the first interview that you and I did, that when I survived cancer 20 years ago, I knew that I could never go back into a normal business world, but neither did I know about private membership association at the time. And so I created a business that was much more like a PMA than a business, because it was purpose-driven and it was all about helping and serving people, giving them tools that they could use to navigate their lives with, to become freer, to heal, to you know, have relationships that they want to have, to create the projects that they feel God is telling them to create. And so, you know, the primary purpose of the PMA is to serve our basic needs. And this is something that, because of public education and institutions and, you know, public food, the whole grocery store and the regulated food industry, we have forgotten that we have this right to serve our own needs. And we don't have to apologize or ask anybody's permission to do that. So that's really what nails it down. And, you know, again, being faith-based and very much we're instructed to go into the private. For example, just a one example that Jacqueline uses in The Wall of Jericho, and the prostitute Rahab, who, you know, lied to have the spies come into her household. And when the wall of Jericho fell, her part, although this is somewhat debatable, people argue about this, but her part of the wall didn't fall. It was her household, right? So it's God telling us that there is a safe place while the whole thing is collapsing around us. There is a place to go.
Well, as you were talking, and the question I was asking you, I had, you know, there are some things that are private membership associations that act in the private that have, that are successful. And examples of that would be like your VFW, your Veterans for Foreign Warfare. I don't know if they have things like that in Canada. Masonic lodges, elk lodges, yes. Those kind of things are, yes, private membership associations. Even country clubs have that as well. But a lot of these entities don't do anything, as far as I'm aware, don't do anything that's like strictly illegal, like serving alcohol past the suggested hours. So they don't actually have to deal with any situations with policy enforcers or police officers. So it's learning, I guess, in a way, is kind of learning from some of those entities and how that they are able to act to be protected and then follow something very similar. But I like the fact that you've kind of combined this with a ministry as well, not just a PMA, not just mm-hmm. like a private club. Like there's something more to this with the ministry. Forming a ministry, did you do this as like an unincorporated association?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So did you get that from Robert Michael from House of Marcus?
You know, some of the ideas, the concept of the private came from him, but, you know, I can't promote him at this stage. So there's politically incorrect there. I just have to blurt that out and say it's not a direction I would take. Okay. So not giving advice to anybody else, but there are some ways that may actually end up locking you into the public. So that's just my take on it. And, you know, if he hears this, he might be taking me to task a little bit, but we'll see. We'll see.
I need to do a follow-up with Robert Michael. So, I mean, if, and I've set myself up to the point where I'm not a part of anybody's little group. So if I got a question and you call yourself a friend, we should be able to get an answer, whether we agree to disagree. So I don't mind going that route if that's something that you're potentially interested in. Now, Jacqueline, she's the one to introduce or really kind of push this idea of private domain to you. Is that correct?
Yeah. So she's like us that, you know, for the 2 years, she's searching for solutions, seeing the writing on the wall, seeing that again, the Fibonacci sequence, how things are about to play out. And she can actually place us pretty good in a timeline right now, which is fascinating to me. And so she actually worked with, it's called PMA Power in the States, and they were the closest to her values that she could find. So she certified with them and became the first Canadian in his association that was certified to help other people create their own PMAs, and including foundation documents and the lawful side of things. And I just aligned with her values so closely. And she's a very, she's just very careful to see and is very versed. Like she's a farmer, for example. So having, coming from the Northwest Territory, you should totally have her on, Chris. But like,
I'm definitely interested. And that was going to be one of the questions to ask you as well, of the people you've interviewed, who should I talk to? But we'll mm-hmm. come back to that.
I'd have her on every day if she was free. And so being a farmer and living in the wild in the Northwest Territories, where you're like constantly battling the predators, and you know, she's got livestock and everything. So she knew, and she's also certified in regenerative agriculture. She dropped that certification and is doing some of that function inside her own PMA now, because it, you know, and this is back to the point you were making before, that the private has been basically co-opted by the elite. You know, another very well-known private membership association is the Bar Association.
Oh, that good one. You're right.
Right, that people don't realize what they're dealing with is a club. I mean, you can tell there's all the symptoms of it, but you know, those associations use it to hide corruption, to hide money, to hide the wrongs that they're doing. When you mention the Freemasonic and the secret societies, that's where they get a very bad reputation. But we can do it for good. So, you know, having witnessed in nature how the predator and the prey work, it gave her a lot of insight into how the public and the private operate, and the beast that we're dealing with. It's, you know, we actually don't want to, as much as you want to rail against the machine and, you know, take down the court system and take down the government and all of those more infrastructure, you know, or order creating entities, it's not what we want. It's absolutely not what we want. You know, if you kill the predator in the wild, then the prey become predator on the land.
You become that which you hate.
Yep, exactly. You got it.
This vicious cycle that we've not really learned a lot from.
This is it. This is exactly it. And so, you know, by allowing nature, mirroring nature and seeing, okay, how could this work? It's just we have a predator class that is way out of balance with the prey. So we just need to, you know, humble that side of the equation. And how do you do that? By meeting your own needs, by showing up for your own people. And saying like, oh, your food system, you want us to eat crickets? Get this, in Manitoba, they announced this week they're spending $8 million to create a cricket processing plant.
When you're talking about cricket processing plant, I'm saying process like I'm a Canadian. I say a processing plant. But when you say that, are we talking about grinding up the said crickets into some sort of meal?
Foods.
Now, yeah. I went to Austin, Texas about a month ago, and when I was there, there were some different health vendor setups at one of these conferences I went to, which didn't necessarily match up with the conference, but it was cool that they were there. It was actually in a VIP area where the speakers and VIP people for the conference were at. So, but they were selling protein bars that were made out of crickets. My friend bought one. Now, to be fair, now I know that there's a lot of talk on mainstream news and things that have come out from like the World Economic Forum camp about eating bugs and crickets and all that. But I would say 25, 30 years ago in the Washington, D.C. area, there was a place called the Insect Club. And it literally was a restaurant that served insects, like mealworm burgers and a variety of different things. So it's not as if it's a new thing. Like there are people that do appreciate the protein value from bugs and do eat it. But the idea of being forced to do that because of a food shortage is not good, but it's a lot better than what was proposed in the Soylent Green movie that was set in the time period of 2022. Are you familiar with that movie?
No, I'm not.
It's this sci-fi movie about, and it, again, it's set in 2022. I think they filmed it back in the 60s, maybe earlier. And I think Charlton Heston was starring in it. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with food shortage. And some scientist or something to that effect had come up with something to kind of alleviate the hunger issues, which was this product called Soylent Green. And so nobody was going hungry. But it turned out Soylent Green was actually made up of us humans.
Oh, well, that was the next point I was going to bring up is because
are there human processing plants in Canada now, too?
Well, I don't know. But have you ever seen there's a restaurant? I haven't seen it for a long time, but there's a restaurant online. It serves body parts. It's like made like a major gourmet, high end elitist.
Well, in L.A., there was the Cannibal Club. And now that all the information's come out about all the other stuff, the pizza related things and the Pete's and all that. Mm-hmm. I think people get what I'm saying with Pete. If you understand the Biden laptop, because of that, there's a lot of stuff that says that didn't even exist. Now that would also, I believe, be a PMA because it wasn't opened up to the general public and it was the Cannibal Club. They were serving human meat, but they had a process of how they obtained said humans. It wasn't like they were just collecting up the homeless in LA and just serving them up to people. I mean, there was but still, yeah. I mean, it's the best way I could say it is, when I restructured my channel and came up with the show that you're on now, Stranger Than Fiction. I mean, that is like just the best three words to describe reality today.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. No, if there weren't for some of the anchors of it, you know, just again, back to the Bible, that it's all prophesied right there. And so many things, even, you know, like there was a place where they talk about, I'm going to send the hornets out in front. And here we are dealing with poison injections that, you know, that's a good symbol of the getting stung by the hornet. Right. And all of these clues and symbols that make it, you know, it actually got me from a place of being, you know, relatively terrified, although I have a lot of skills for dealing with fears, but feeling more hope than fear about our future. And that, you know, it's amazing that this time is happening, because it's really jettisoned us into freedom, because we don't, you know, we no longer have this public structure to hold on to. It doesn't provide the quote unquote safety and security that we might have had years ago. And it's giving us that inspiration to go out and go, oh, well, this is what I do. And, you know, I'd never be working on a farm, for example. I wouldn't have done a lot of the things that I did. I, you know, just grew the most amazing garden in close here as well. I wouldn't be up to my eyeballs in regenerative agriculture techniques and learning about law and all the things that I wouldn't be doing right now, that are this whole time is responsible for and bringing me together with my people.
Right.
You know, I always was touching on them, but not having full on clarity as I have had in the last couple of years. Now it's beautiful. They're everywhere. These people, like, you can, you know, there's all the signs and signals, and all I do is put myself out on my podcast and be as authentic as I can. And they're finding me now. Right. So it's just an amazing time.
Well, it's beautiful how the universe works. Right? When you're on the right path, I think things are brought to you as needed. As I was telling you before we started recording, you're asking if I had found some people to help me out with the team, and haven't had quite the luck that I wanted to. And I sometimes, like I was telling you, I feel like I got to be patient, just wait for the universe to bring me what I need as I truly need it, not as I want it. Mm-hmm. Wants and needs, the big difference. Exactly. Now, when you mentioned the sting, though, it made me think the bee sting. So, with symbolism, I associate hornets as a class of bees. So, I'm just generalizing as bees. So, with the symbolism, we see the fleur de lis being used a lot in symbolism. And from what I'm starting to see with some of my research, is it represents more of the bee.
Okay.
Which is really interesting when you kind of think about what you said.
I'd have to see it again. Almost have to pull it up to the fleur-de-lis. Is that what you were referring?
Yeah, like the symbol that's used in New Orleans, like the New Orleans Saints football team uses it. It's supposed to be a kind of a symbolic rendition of a, like a honeybee, like a bee.
Okay, I can't even spell it, so I can't look it up. But
I don't even know how to spell it either. It's it's Francais, right? Francais. Yeah. So yeah, maybe exactly. Contact one of your friends in Montreal. Oh,
I got it. There it is, fleur-de-lis. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a kind of a trident too, actually. Hey,
you get the trident out of it too. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different things you can get out of the symbology of that, which I just found interesting.
Yes, exactly. It's even four parts. Yeah, I'll have to look at that.
So, with private domain, what does those two words together? What does that mean to Beth Martins?
Well, there's I actually did a video, and I've got the list, the 11 things that I love about the private domain. Do you want me to lay some of that on you?
Is that on your YouTube channel, by the way?
It is on my YouTube channel. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely want you to lay it on me. And I was going to do a screen share of your YouTube channel while you're doing that.
Okay.
So lay it on me, lady.
All right. So number one, it's not a democracy, right? It's not a communism. Everybody has a say kind of thing, that it has a very clear founder and leader. And that you will, you know, as the founder, I will be determining what takes place in, this is one of my garden streams. I did it from the garden. And so it has clear direction. It has clear leadership. And that's one of the things that I think when people think about assembling and getting into association, that they think, oh, now it's going to be a free for all and everybody's going to, you know, contribute wherever they want to. And there's no actual leader. And to me, this is, you know, that's just a recipe for a mess. And going in too many directions. So I have a very clear direction. I have a clear vision, and I'm going to sit at the helm of that and create that for my membership. So that's one of the things that I really love. The second thing I love is that it won't die when I do. It has longevity. So my business, if it, you know, say last year I died, my work would be gone. And this is a spiritual obligation that your work goes on. God has given you gifts, and to let them die with you is a kind of sin. I'll just say the word's loaded, of course, but
I get what you're saying though.
And so many people have pain. Like a lot of my clients, it's exactly, they reach a point in their life and, you know, I talk to a woman, she's literally crying to me that if I die with this stuff in me, it will be a wrong thing. I need to actually offer this and take leadership in this way. So the Private Membership Association, because the life of a PMA is its membership, right? It's not the documents. It's not in the public. It's all, something isn't real until it's documented. And in the private, it's real because of the relationships between the members actually doing stuff, right? Doing real work, creating real tangible things that the people will benefit from. So that's a really cool thing, that it's much more of a legacy project than my business ever would have been.
I like the way you put it. I like the way you put everything you've explained. You've done a great job of like articulating the way that you're feeling and your vision and the way that you're moving forward, which I appreciate.
Oh, thank you so much.
No problem.
Appreciate that. Yeah. The third thing is that it is, I've talked about this already, but that it is a biblically recommended strategy for surviving the extinction event. So like, who can't like that, right? And people associating among themselves, it's also the antidote to the, you know, like the freedom movement has this narrative of unification. Well, guess what? That's the globalist agenda, right? I started hearing one after the other, these.
Well, the different sort of unifications, but yeah, I get the point that you're saying, because globalization is uniting the world.
Exactly. It's unification, and all, you know, all religions welcome, all languages welcome, all cultures welcome. Well, again, 100% globalist message.
But we can, just as a devil's advocate thing, we can unite to go against those agendas, which would be, in a sense, yeah, using their power against themselves, in a sense. If that's their strength, then if that makes sense.
Yeah, yes and no. So, in the practical terms, I've seen many groups right now in this time that we've been in attempt to unify people. Well, guess what happens? They end up in conflict with each other. Because the unification, they don't have the same values. They don't have the same goals. Even though we all want freedom, everyone's defining freedom in their own way, which is good, that you must do that. In fact, that your definition of freedom is a very personal, private thing. Doesn't mean you can't share it, but it's here is where freedom is. And so, yeah, but by encouraging people to unite, all it's done is create conflict. The exact thing that our controllers want. Then we're further divided. I have seen so many groups come together and faction off, and this person hates that person and they don't support them anymore. And it's just, again, yeah, shit show, right? But there is some truth in it. And the truth is that if we all went into our own households and invited our kin into them, then those PMAs could unite as a force, right? Even right down to communication systems, right down to transportation systems. Trade and all kinds of things that right now are handled in the public could be handled by a network of PMAs. And that would effectively be that unification that doesn't require everybody to be the same.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's like, in a sense, it reminds me of what the Native Americans, Native Canadians, I don't know what you guys call.
Politically correct. I don't know anymore either.
So, yeah, it kind of reminds me though of like the tribal councils, which were made up of different members of the tribe.
Exactly.
Because the council itself didn't represent the tribes individually. It just represented things on a collective level. It made things easier for commerce and other things to do that. And there's a lot of groups I'll talk with you more about privately. And maybe we could do episodes about that very topic, about, people that are trying to interconnect PMAs, something to that effect, and create networks, solutions for us moving forward, ways that we can interact and get around the current system that we have to utilize.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the fourth thing that we talked a little bit about it that I love about PMAs is that it's historically precedented right up until the present moment. So it's not some, even though it's maybe new to a lot of people's consciousness and concepts, it is not new to the world at all. And so it is a long history that it can be mapped out, present day associations that still operate this way. And therefore, on the legal side, then it is, depending on how you operate, literally, if you're just trying to have a business in the private and not pay taxes, you are extremely vulnerable to being taken down. And we know someone who it just happened to. And that's what they were doing. They were trying to flip a business just to survive, save the business, which is, you can understand that. Of course, everybody needs to survive financially, and that's not wrong in our slave financial society that we're in right now. But, so it just gives a lot of confidence. The reason I chose a ministry, apart from the faith-based thing that I'm actually extremely passionate about, is that ministries have the best track record of surviving in the PMA world. Also that it fosters organic growth and it has a life of its own, right? So the private domain, it's all full of life. It is favored, literally favored by God. And when you put a little bit of energy into the private, it blooms and comes alive. So there are so many things that have happened in my, I didn't even expect to launch so fast. This was something I thought maybe in the fall was coming, and I was working in the back end. And all of a sudden I met Paul Gauci, who is featured in the film Back to Eden. And I saw this film, I was actually depressed. I felt I wasn't feeling high at all, but I watched this film. By the end of the film, my energy went whoosh like this. I'm jumping up and down for joy at the end of his film, going oh my God, of course, God planned for everything to be easy, not to be difficult and a toil. Right. So just a really quick thing. His explanation is that, when Adam and Eve were supposedly kicked out of the Garden of Eden, they weren't kicked out in his interpretation. Adam forgot he had a father. He forgot that he was in paradise, and he turned towards toiling. He also turned towards tilling. Now I'm getting off track here, but so by tilling the land, it made food an immense labor, almost more expensive to create food than it is, especially to just go out and buy it from the grocery store where they're, doing mass agriculture and with that. And it requires so much input, so much money, so much equipment, so many chemicals, so many everything to keep that whole fake system alive. Whereas in the real, if I use the growing metaphor, you put a little bit of energy towards making your garden more like nature, giving it a floor, not exposing the ground so that it becomes a burn victim. Then that, I just visited my garden after being a week away, and incredible growth had taken place in 1 week. I had zero cucumbers, and yesterday I pulled out these 12 honking cucumbers. Amazing. So just an example of how the private domain can have a life of its own. As I'm creating the PMA, people are coming forward to I didn't think I was going to apprentice coaches for a while. I train coaches in my work. And then all of a sudden someone came forward who's inquiring about apprenticeship. And next thing you know, I've got an apprentice for my next round of the Journey Code coaching certification. So that's super exciting how things can happen by themselves. And, just putting out the energy, putting a little bit of work towards something to create a foundation. And then things can grow. So that's a really beautiful thing.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It sounds like how things are definitely meant to be. But you got to, it just doesn't happen. You have to put work to get to that point. And it
that's
takes
right.
developing that relationship and walking the walk.
That's it. And doing the right work, because you can work like a holic, which I am, and not produce anything that's going to grow itself. But putting your energy into the private is going to pay dividends. It's even when you do regenerative agriculture, which is as I've been mentioning, the land tithes every year creates at least 10% more abundance than it did the year before, right? Just by honoring the natural way things grow.
Okay.
So that's very cool. The reason I love the private is it's archetypal. So we already talked about that. And if people are interested, they should go and check out the Anarchapulco Cultivate event, which I talked about that at. And
is there, if there's a link for that, will you send it to me so I can put it in a video description?
Yes, I will. Do you want it right now or after?
Just afterwards. Just make sure I can get it. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. It's free to sign up. And there's some amazing talks there as well. We talked about it being, you know, both legally and divinely ordained to meet the needs of the assembly. Number eight, this is one of my all-time favorites, is that it requires royal self-responsibility, right? So if you see my agreement, you're going to see that once you sign that agreement, you will not be able to sue anybody, not me, not another member, not the PMA itself, that all disputes will be handled within it by tribunals. You mentioned that, you know, about the Native American, how that is a much more tried and true historical way to handle disputes in the private, so that you don't have to, you know, the Bible says settle on the way to court, because otherwise in court, they're going to smash you with a hammer. And that's my paraphrase, but you know, it's kind of the truth of it, right? You are in a snake's den. And if you don't know court procedure, you know, it's basically who knows court procedure best is going to win. That's the fact, not the right person, not the one who did right, or, you know, the wrong person is not going to get punished. It's going to be the person who knows that system in that particular place. So the quality of self-responsibility to me is golden. This is what people need to be able to not sit and go like, okay, who's going to look after me or pick up the pieces when things fall down with our health, right? Like that I haven't barely seen a doctor. Maybe I can count 1.5 times in the last 20 years that I had to see a doctor for something. I'm glad they're there when I need them, but I have learned to take care of my own health by eating right and taking supplements and exercising, get fresh air and sunshine and, you know, all of those kind of things that are just so basic. But if you don't do it, it doesn't work.
Well said. Well said. Mm. You got to put the work into it. And some of that I needed to hear myself as a reminder, because that was one of the things that I was doing with the move, is trying to start restructuring my day so I can make sure that I'm not letting certain things go by the wayside. I need to focus on my mind, my body, and my spirituality equally, and not put more emphasis in certain areas. And that's kind of what I've been doing by overworking myself. It just kind of kills my energy from wanting to do anything else. And that's kind of made things suffer, where I started gaining weight, wasn't eating as healthy, wasn't exercising. And now that I've started doing some of those things, I can see a difference. And it's just a matter of continually doing these to set better regimens for my routines. So
fantastic.
Hearing you say things has also kind of been confirmation for me. So I appreciate that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. I say it to remind myself too. So
I speak to myself often in these videos.
Yeah. That's it. You know, if you speak it, then you have to live it, right? Otherwise you're not credible with yourself. So that's it's a good trick. I often use that.
So we left off at number eight.
Yeah, that was number eight. And number nine is that it fosters the purpose of potentially every member, not just my purpose, because people can come forward with their gifts. And despite the fact that I will be the decision maker about what takes place in there, there will be a lot of room for people to expand. I don't know if you're familiar with Brett Fountain, for example. He's the co-host of Rule of Law Radio. And
does he work with Randy?
Yeah, Randy Kelton, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that's why I thought it sounded familiar. Yeah. He's one I've been meaning to get on, and Alphonse has been recommending both him and Randy.
Yeah, he's a beautiful man, like heart, soul, and so knowledgeable and helping people like crazy. So he's coming into the House of Free Will in 3 weeks and giving a workshop on how to create bar grievances. And not just sitting and telling people what to do, but actually getting them to do the work. And, you know, again, back to self-responsibility, that they're going to have to do some research, and then we're going to come and we're going to have this forum where people help each other troubleshoot. Like, I had the lawyer and he did this, and, you know, what could I get him on? So, you know, so Brett is going to be able to, you know, live some of his purpose through my PMA. And that's going to be the case for a lot of people I've already invited to give talks and presentations. I've got to shout out to Sean Alger, if you don't mind, who is an artist who did my coaching certification, and he's combined his art and the coaching work together. So I'm going to have him come in and do a workshop for my members, and they're going to be able to go and work with him as well. So yeah, lots of potential for many people's purpose to play out, especially for those that say, you know, want to work in the private, but don't have the bandwidth to create their own private membership association. So they can do a lot of that private work in the confines of my, my PMA.
Okay. That's good. No, yeah. I like the way you're thinking about this.
Right on. Super fun. And then number 10 is that it's decentralized. So we talked about that a little bit as well, about the unification thing, that, that you get to unify with your people, but in a way that's, you know, going to be explicit to the land that you're on, the climate that you're in, the kind of people, the challenges that they're facing in that region, in that area, and be able to meet their needs. Now, my ministry is international, so that's going to be a bit of a different thing, although I'm creating a local chapter so that we can get a little bit more of a handle on, you know, I've got a connection with water, a beautiful, beautiful man, small business that found the like best water ever. It's so amazing. Can't even say enough about, and I'll shout out to Piney Fine if you're in the Manitoba area to buy from him. And I was thinking, well, why couldn't he come into my association and sell water to my members so that if they ever try to shut him down, which, you know, could very well happen. They want to brainwash us that water is this big shortage on Earth, which if you know primary water, there is no shortage. That's a big fat lie.
Yeah.
And so he's got access to the stream. And if he can come into the private, maybe protect that water in the private and supply for the needs of the people.
Awesome.
So yeah, super good. And then the last reason I love the private is that it's exchange is free without hindrance. So kind of just what I said there, nobody can come and regulate your exchange with other members, with me. They can't say how you contract. Now that's already true theoretically in the private, that when you have a private contract with someone, the public can't come and do anything in it or, you know, tell you what to do. Although that happens, they run roughshod over people's rights all the time because they don't understand. And just quickly, while I think of it, Amanda Ridding, who is a warrior champion in Canadian court procedure. We've been so lucky that she's joined our groups and has taken on teaching for people. And she's doing what's probably going to end up a series of workshops. It started out two-part, but it's ballooning into a great deal more, specifically on contract law. So that's something that you can take part in. It's starting August 5th and the second part to the 15th and then further installations after that.
Okay.
So, yeah,
awesome. And that's all, and people can get access to all that by joining your PMA.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just by going to that application page that you had up earlier.
Now I have to ask, is there a cost for someone to join?
It's by donation. I actually gave a lot of thought to this because, you know, I didn't want to make it inaccessible to people. I didn't want it to be like, oh, darn, I can't have access to Beth Martin's anymore because I can't pay. So I made it by donation. And there is a form at the very bottom of that page. You just are,
I didn't see it. It just had the,
there's a form. This is actually not the agreement page. This is the application page. But once you get to the agreement, once the application is accepted, there's a form. If for some reason you can't afford the smallest donation per month, then I'm not going to keep you out of the House of Free Will for that reason. So yeah.
That's good. So yeah, the people that can't afford will, and the ones that can't, they're covered.
Exactly. Exactly. I didn't want to make it free because there's so much value is going to go into this. Like right away when you get in, you get a free copy of my book as a PDF. You don't mind if I flash my book?
Go ahead. Yeah, flash your book. let's go big screen. You can put closer to the camera if you want.
There you go. Journey.
Awesome.
Yeah, a map of archetypes to find lost purpose in a sea of meaninglessness. So this was 20 years in the making and goes through the 8 archetypes of the hero's journey as I found them inside myself. This is the work I used to heal from cancer. And I feel so happy that I've got incredible feedback on this book, that people have been able to use it to make big changes in their own life. And super happy. Awesome. Sometimes the first book is ugly baby. And I'm like, I'm not having no ugly babies.
No ugly babies for me.
No ugly babies. Yeah. So, you get a copy of my book, you get access to a members only, I'm calling it a fellowship meeting. I don't really have a name for it yet, that I'll be bringing guests in. And August 16th is the first one that's going to happen for that. So the membership can come in and there will be, some looking at scripture. There'll be some guest presentations. There'll be the member. It'll be more of a Zoom call so members can actually get to know and see each other. By the way, do not apply for my membership under any screen name or any fake name or any initials. That you, it's an automatic refusal for an application that's under a, I'll just say, fake name. And if you don't mind if I make this point, I'm on a bandwagon about this, that many people use screen names, and it's understandable because we are being predated, and you know there's this will or this want to hide from the beast, so that you know certain people, like I'm hosting, for example, Max Egan on this will be, I think, before so it'll be a recording by the time this comes out, but I'm hosting him on Friday on my podcast.
He's a good friend of mine.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm so lucky.
Don't post a video on YouTube.
Don't post his video on YouTube.
No.
Yeah.
No, well, you'll definitely get a, no matter what, you'll get a, if you don't, I would be surprised if you don't get a strike.
Right. Yeah.
They kicked him off the platform. You're familiar with Max. So I had a chance to meet him and just ended up befriending him, and cool dude. I actually want to go down to Mexico so I can hang out with him for some length of time.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a gem in our community. He was one of my first, you know, kind of red pill experiences to see through the veil, as he says. And so what was my point about
I'm sorry, you said Max Egan, and I had to
add that's okay. So he goes by a screen name, you know, like at Crow House, and Max is actually not his first name. He won't give his first name. And again, it's, you can understand it. So I'm not criticizing or making anyone feel bad, but I'm on a campaign to make people see the benefit of using their real name. Number one, you're not hiding from the beast. They know who you are. They've got algorithms and calculations to find and pinpoint you. Even though you have a different screen name on every platform, they know who you are. Don't
facial recognition, all these different things. So I get
it.
That's why I use my real name.
There you go. Good for you. That's amazing. And we're effectively just hiding from each other. And this is a problem. You know, I've had people in my zone that come join my Telegram group, and it's the fourth screen name I've seen of them. I don't know who they are. They could be a good friend. I don't even know who they are. And for my PMA, it's like the real thing. You're Christian or your given name and your family name. And I don't care if that's, you think that's your corporate account and all that kind of, patriot mythology, as Alphonse calls it.
Well, could somebody put essentially like Chris Rice of the House, or Chris Wayne of the House of Rice or something to that effect? Are you actually,
that wouldn't be a problem. That wouldn't be a problem because you've got your real name in there.
Okay. Just in case you got some sticklers, it gives a little bit of wiggle room for some people.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, if you want to add on to your real name, but not too obscure, that's the part, because people are used to being able to go into, say, somebody's podcast and they'll lurk in the background. And if they go in the chat, it's not with a name nobody knows. And, it's just all this hiding, and
or the people from other groups trying to cause division and infiltrate and all those kind of things too. Yeah,
exactly. And it's a real ripoff to each other, because we need to know who each other are, who are our friends, who are the people who are going to stand up, maybe have our back in a bad moment. And, relationships are based in authenticity, and the name is the first place, like whatever name you were given, whether you relate to it or not, it's not who you are, of course, but it's a start.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Have you covered all 11 points?
We went through all 11 points.
I wanted to make sure. I thought we did. I just wanted to make a conscious effort to make sure that we covered that. So I got a few more questions that I wanted to ask you, and then we can go ahead and wrap things up. Mm-hmm. Of all the people that you've been interviewing regarding the legal fiction, the whole law, legal world, who are you finding more validity in what they're saying? And in that instance, I would also kind of add to that, and I'm probably going to want you to follow up with this, with like sending me some information like on Telegram or something, but who would you also recommend of those people, or all those people, that I should check out and interview?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'll start by saying, you know, how did I come to my own conclusions and stop wearing that question mark in my head every day and every night, was that I saw, you know, like the whole legal fiction is a fiction. that this thing, you know, making us afraid of our capital letter names, making us afraid of this account that we hold, the whole thing about it being a trust, and there's all this money and the lure of all that money that people are going to, you know, reclaim their security and all that kind of thing. I think that is absolutely a massive trap. And you can see there's a track record of people going to jail that are trying that. And so, yeah, I just want to say that out loud. So what I found to be real and what I decided is that I'm putting 90% of my energy towards the private and 10% of my energy towards the public. And what that means is court procedure, right? So the likes of Dr. Frederick Graves, Alphonse Fasciolo, Brett Fountain, Amanda Ridding, in Canada, Stand for Thee is a very big proponent of teaching people how to go to court. Jane Scarfe is part of that. Big shout out to Rebecca Shepherd. She is a powerful warrior. If I could quickly tell a story about her, this one, oh my gosh. So, you know, people have been protesting at Parliament Hill for a long time. I know you know about the truckers convoy and everything. So they were in there like a dirty shirt, and many people haven't given up protesting at Parliament Hill. It is a right, actually, to protest. Here's a thing about the legal world. It had us remove the word protest from our vocabulary. Well, guess what? If you say you're not protesting, you're loitering, and they can charge you for that. Right. So they got us to take away this protesting thing when this is the thing that we actually can do. It's on the books. And so she was at a protest on Parliament Hill, and she brought her Fuck Trudeau sign. And not just so that she could be, belligerent or anything, but basically to support free speech. Well, next thing you know, they came up and arrested her for this Fuck Trudeau sign. They handcuffed her, took her away. Dropped her off because she knows law. She's been to court many times. She was kind of baiting them in a way to get a ticket, and she didn't know she'd be like taken off to wherever, not dangerously. I don't want to emphasize that or anything. But so then she got the names and, you know, badge numbers of these cops and put it out. The next day she sent them a notice, $35,000 notice of liability. And there's a lot of, you know, notice of liabilities going out there, and on their own, they're a big fat nothing, but they are a very good precursor to a lawsuit. And so she sent the notice and then threatened the lawsuit. And they know her by now that she can follow through and actually take people down and out. They use small claims court, which is really cool because it's not the, you know, 2 to 5 years that the average claim is going to take to go through the courts. The small claims can be done, you know, in Ontario, it's a $35,000 ding. So it's not a tiny little thing. And you get a handful of people, say 10 people do it, it's $350,000. And so they can see she has a strategy. She's going to follow through. Well, the next day, it was now legal, or they were allowing people to have their Fuck Trudeau signs and their megaphones and all kinds of things they had been confiscating up until that point. The next day, it was turned around.
That's crazy.
I know.
You mentioned the notice of liabilities, and I have to ask. We both have interviewed Cal. I think he's a nice guy, really smart. But I didn't find a lot of validity into his notice of liabilities. I thought a lot of, if not all, the evidence of him saying it were circumstantial. What are your thoughts on that?
I've thought about that a lot. I love Cal. I've interviewed him several times.
That's why I prefaced with he's a good dude. I want to make sure, like, exactly. I'm not trying to downplay and say anything negative about him as an individual. I just didn't find a lot of, and I give him a lot of time. But I just don't find a lot of validity in the notice of liabilities.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a mass action, I think it stands a lot more chance to work. We sent notices of conditional acceptance, you know, similar but different from notice of liability to 12 snakes up the chain, and went through the whole process, got them in default and dishonor, and it was just crickets, right? Didn't hear anything. But, you know, it still sent a good message. I feel good about doing it. I grew up as a person, and it took a lot of my it took balls for me to do that. Actually, there was a real new thing. So many people couldn't do it. They couldn't follow through. It was insane. It seemed so scary in the end. It was a big fat nothing. But with Cal, you know, first of all, things are already off the charts. People are dying of poison vaccination. Oh, shit. sorry.
It's all right. I mean, it's all good. Because I mean, I'd say vacations, but I think we're, I mean, I like to think that late enough in a video, I don't know, I could be wrong, but.
And I didn't finish the word either. So
it's all right.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah.
You were just talking about vacations. It's okay.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Vacations and jobs. Vacation. That's how I refer to the hornet sting as a job.
Yeah. There you go. So, you know, so by my standards, it should have happened a long time ago, this mass action, right? What, you know, and it's it, the number of times I've heard it, because I'll check in with these meetings and I just hear, oh, it's just about to happen, just about to happen. And
it's always just about to happen with every group.
See, this is
but again, not to knock Cal, because I think, and that was one of the, you know, I did want to try to bring some of these teachers together, and that was a mistake because of things that you've already mentioned. But that was the reason. I feel like everybody, shouldn't say everybody, but I feel like a lot of the people that we have talked to, some that I haven't, but some that you have, hold pieces of the puzzle. And if we can put all those pieces on the table, we might be able to put the puzzle together. But
bingo.
It's a lot easier to say that statement than to actually pull people together enough to do that.
Yeah, but you're bang on. See, what all of this taught me is to not follow a guru, not to look for the guy, like not to look to Cal to save me or any of these, you know, I imagine Cal is doing his very best, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he has malicious intent, like we've mentioned about some that we haven't named.
Right, exactly.
And I think if we're using people's names too, people should assume that we're not including them in the category of being a scammer, unless we're specifically saying that. So I don't want people to take what we're saying out of context.
Yeah, and when you make bold claims like that, you have to prove those claims, and nobody can prove. You know, I go on my intuition a lot, and the number of times I've been right, because my spidey sense is just doing this in the back end, and then, you know, I get this confirmation and that confirmation, and then this happens, and you know, so I don't want to congratulate myself, but I guess I am anyway. To have just really good senses, right? Feeling into people and what they're, but what you said, that the golden thing is that everybody has something to offer. Even if they're the outright evil controlled op, they have to bring at least 80% truth to the table, because otherwise no one's going to listen to them. So you can take something good from everybody. And that's, as long as you're not looking for the guru or the savior, the person to take you home, you have to do that yourself. That's the self-responsibility, right? We have to find our way, and there's no way around that. So, you know, even if you tap into, and Jacqueline Milne has been a great teacher for me of that, to not just, you know, demonize and push away and X out, kind of cancel people in my world, but to just take what they have to offer and leave what doesn't work, or, you know, that kind of thing. There are certain characters I won't have anything to do with, because otherwise it's literally entrapment on my part to bring them on for an interview when I know what I know. And then, you know, what am I going to bring them on for? But I will often vet people through my podcasts until I sit down and have the face-to-face conversations such as you and I are having now. Then I don't have the foundation for that intuition.
Yeah, I'm not knowledgeable enough to 100% call somebody out. But I can bring relevancy to the fact that you can't prove anything you're saying at the same time, too. So I don't think that if you have a conversation with somebody that you haven't fully vetted, and in the course of the conversation, your spidey sense is tingling, I don't think there's anything wrong, personally, with asking questions that would help bring validity to either what you're saying or what they're saying, so that you could find some middle ground of understanding. Because I mean, there's been people that I've interviewed that I've just had to take the interview out, just take it off, just stop, you know. And it's and that too is part of like the frustration that I was dealing with the information overload, and just seems like there's more people in that category than there's not, unfortunately. And there's only one other person I was going to ask you specifically about, and it's just because of this individual being kind of more against the grain than a lot of the people that you and I speak to. Someone who I have a lot of respect for, so someone else who I think is equally as intelligent, good intentions, Clint Richardson. When I first started interviewing him, he started shifting. Well, not when I first started interviewing, but during the course of the interviews. And I think he's been on a show like 4 or 5 times, if I'm not mistaken, maybe more, maybe less, but several times. And the last interview was like Mr. Doom and Gloom, just kind of coming out against all these gurus. And what's the word that him and Alphonse like to use? It'll come to my mind, the word that they use. But what are your thoughts? Because again, I mean, he's wrote a book that's over 1,100 pages about the straw man. He's done a lot of research into this. He's spent a lot of time on this subject, looked into a lot of the people that we've looked into, and he's come to his conclusions. What are your thoughts about Mr. Clint Richardson?
Yeah, I recently interviewed him, and just personally, I liked him. It was a very dynamic, full interview. I enjoyed it. And we didn't really go head to head on the straw man stuff. I didn't want to challenge him in that respect, just, with the 1,100 page book and everything. I want to undo his paradigm in public. But probably most of that I wouldn't agree with at this point. He is a proponent of the private domain. And, if there's any critique that I had, and I feel sad because I've no right to critique, but it was that when, and this isn't him alone, it's actually a lot of characters and figures that, yeah, there's an interview.
We're just talking about actions, though. You're not critiquing him as, mm-hmm. As an individual. Right. We will know them by their fruit. So I feel like we have the right and the ability to be able to have this discussion without it being offensive to somebody.
Yeah, fair enough. So the one thing I found that once you get into that rabbit hole of finding everything wrong, then you don't find everything right. You know what I mean? Like, so you're so hyper-focused on exposing the corruption and the lies and the things that have been done to us. And then there's very little actual creation going on. I mean, 1,100 page book is very creative and that kind of thing. But when you look at what our needs are, nobody's going to be eating books, right? Nobody's going to be living in a book. Nobody's going.
I mean, now, they would eat the books if they're made of like some plant-based material. There is a possibility you can make books edible. Okay. Maybe we should go on and make books edible campaign.
Well, cows can eat books. They can translate, and then you can drink the cow's milk. So yeah, there you go. But so it's, that's the only thing. And then like the inspiration, the life that things would give you, because you can only be fueled for so long on anger and righteousness. That's something that it will suck the life right out of you. It's very costly, right? It's predator energy. And the predator is not wrong. We have a predator side to us. It's like the masculine, right? That's not absolutely not wrong. But if it's relied on and it's your only modus operandi to take action from, then the cost is enormous at an energetic level. So for me, I found so much power and so much like true energy and aliveness and happiness in the creative process. When the pandemic hits, I'm thinking, okay, for 5 minutes, I'm laying on the floor crying, thinking, because I see where everything's headed. And I'm going like, okay, maybe I just have to like put my head between my knees and live on savings and prep my ass off and all that kind of stuff. But instead, I thought, okay, I always do this when I'm in a pickle. I say, God, what could I create that's of value right now in this time that people actually need? And I knew one day I was going to train coaches. And I thought, well, if they can do that crap out there, I can do this good in here. And so I went to work to create a 7-month certification program, teaching all of my, not secrets, but all of the tools that I use to help people to deprogram and change their life and improve their relationships and be valued for their sacred purpose and know their purpose. And so I got so involved in the creative process, I became a happy person again. I was forward moving. I wasn't always troubleshooting or watching the next doom and gloom video about all the wrong things that are happening. Because like, honestly, once you know, look away, right? You can't spend every day going through all of that, that will pull
not,
your life.
It's not healthy. Yeah, it's
that
not
is
healthy.
Not healthy. Absolutely. But the creative process is life giving and it's hard, right? They don't talk about bleeding on the page for authors for nothing. It is work. You're going to meet yourself. You're going to have to work through things. You're going to come up against your limitations, what you don't know. You're going to find out what you don't know. You're going to be humbled. And that's all beautiful growth for our food for growth, real true soul growth.
I agree 100%. And you say, like I said, you had just been articulating yourself really well. You've been on point. That's one of the reasons why I like you for doing what you're doing, bringing this information in the light, and actually doing the things you're talking about and trying to set an example. Which is kind of what I talk about with the whole practice change thing, is instead of bitching and complaining about things that you don't like, be proactive and do something about the things that you don't like and kind of make your actions as much as possible be infectious so that other people want to do them as well. And then you're leading by example by doing something and people can follow that. Not saying create your own religion or cult and have followers, but just set an example that other people can take that template and modify it to what works best for them in their life.
That's it. Yeah. Leading by example. It is the way that if you see somebody doing something and you're going to have one of two reactions, you're going to either hate them for doing that because there's a sort of underlying, you know, jealousy or
No, go ahead. I was just trying to mute myself so my cough wouldn't come through. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. No worries. So you're gonna have two reactions when you meet somebody that's doing something extraordinary. You're either going to hate them because you're not doing that, and you know let your jealousy separate you from them, or you're going to use it as a way to rise. And if she can do it, I can do it. And that's what I love when people see me and they're like, okay, if she just gave herself permission to create something good in her life, then the chances are I could also do that. So yeah, I think that's a beautiful way that we can gift each other our own gifts is by actually doing shit, not just talking about it.
No, I believe me, obviously I'm in agreement, and I've 100% enjoyed this conversation. I definitely want to be doing more conversations and not have so much of a gap between our next conversation. So okay. let's definitely make sure we're staying in communication about that. Anytime you want to bring me on your channel again, just let me know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe we should dream up a workshop for the House of Free Will. You could come and do. Yeah. Yeah. Super good.
Yeah, let me know. And I could think of some ideas. I could brainstorm some stuff. As far as a list of people that you would suggest, I'll get in touch with you more about that on the private so that you can give me some names and maybe even some contact names, some contact information. And same thing on my end. If there's anybody that you're wanting to interview that I've interviewed, let me know and I'll do my best to connect you with them.
Fantastic. Yeah, I appreciate the cooperation.
We got to help each other out. A lot of people are, ask me to connect them up with people. And obviously there's certain people like that I can't connect you up with. And I'm sure you're in the same situation, but the more that we can do as far as looking out for each other, I don't look at, and I'm sure you agree, I don't look at what we're doing as being competitive. It's complimentary to me.
Yeah.
So people could watch an interview with Alphonse that you did and watch an interview that I did and hopefully get something similar but different from each conversation.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to bring different things out in each person, as I am too. That I'm always amazed when people come and watch an interview, like how many times have they seen Max Egan, but they're excited about my interview because they know it's going to be, through my eyes and heart and mind. So yeah, no, I never get tired of checking out your interviews with, I was a junkie on your interviews for a time there, just like literally every day I'd be watching one of your videos. And I like what you bring out in people. I like what you bring out in me, that you're a good listener. You're listening in a very active way. You're hearing what I'm saying. You're thinking about what I'm saying, taking notes even, right? Like, you're a valuable resource to this community big time.
Thank you for saying that. And I will add that if any of the stuff that I did was any sort of an inspiration for you doing what you did, it makes what I do so worthwhile. That's the point of this, is that I want to see more people doing these kind of things. And if you're an individual who doesn't want to be in front of a camera or have your audio recorded or anything like that, there's things that you can do on back ends. Like I've always said, we all have a role to play, no matter how big or small that role is. It's, and if we all collectively play the roles that we're supposed to play, I think we can get a lot more shit done in a positive way than the direction that we've been taking.
Exactly. No individual is going to survive this, which is going to be, you know, more extreme case. But yeah, with a little cooperation, it's been amazing. You with you and Matt Belair and Crow 777, they were, you know, I think they introduced me to Alphonse in the first place. And now I hear I'm going to be on Crow. So they, you finally.
Are you going on Crow 777?
Yeah, they called me and said they wanted that. We don't have a date yet and it'll be a while, but
that's said, cool. Yeah. I mean, I mean, it took me a lot to get Crow to come on my show and I don't even really feel like it was really that great of a conversation, unfortunately. And there's been a lot of like-minded people that we've interviewed, but I've never been approached in that aspect. So congrats to you for that. Even the Anarchapoco thing. That's really cool.
That was my fourth time speaking at that event.
Awesome. So,
yeah, super fun.
It's kind of like a satellite event to Anarchapoco, right? Because it's not like the Anarchapoco event takes place in around like Valentine's Day.
That's right.
It's physical in appearance event. These are Anarcho-COVID.
It was Anarcho-COVID. It looks like they dropped that. And I was when they asked me to do it, I'm like, yes, sure. But why are you calling it Anarcho-COVID? Because that, you know, it locks it into this agenda narrative.
It's Anarcultivate.
It was Anarchapoco Cultivate is what they called it. Cultivate. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And this was not a live event, but a virtual one.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, totally free.
Make sure you send me a link and then that way I can check it out and include it in the video description. And I will include links for your YouTube channel, which I definitely encourage people, if they're not subscribed or not familiar, to go and subscribe to your YouTube channel. Check out the first conversation that you did on my channel and then the conversation that's available publicly on your channel with me. I will also have a link for your website, BethMartins.com, which will include where people can check out the Choose Freedom Law Summit, the King's Hero Journey podcast, in addition to your coaching certifications. And then if you scroll down, you can apply to be a member of the House of Free Will Ministry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Was there anything else that I didn't cover that you want to talk about or any final thoughts that you want to add to today's conversation, my friend?
If you don't mind, I could give a little bit more detail about what takes place in the ministry itself. And by the way, there's a URL. It is freewillministry.live. It also goes to Beth Martin so that, you know, the two are the same. Either way, you can use those. I was happy about that.
Freewillministry.live.
.live. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was happy. It's all about life. So.
Well, I like that you said that because if anybody else would have had it, they would have said .live. And you took that word and used it for your own. And I like that.
Exactly. You got it. You know me by now. So yeah, in the ministry so far, this is what's planned, that there is going to be the fellowship and study aspect, you know, whether that's going to be the Bible and the law, public domain, private domain, as we've already discussed. I'm going to be offering courses in archetypes, in how to do basic releasing of unconscious programs that everybody should learn in kindergarten, but they don't. These are survival skills, because as long as you are at the mercy of your own inner, you know, fears or anger or whatever it is, even if you think it's good and it's given you life, it ain't. And when you get to the other side of that and start co-creating with God, then miracles really can happen. Like you saw my new tagline, where mastery meets miracles. It used to be where mastery meets magic, but I had to take the magic out because now I know biblically what that actually is about. All my new agey stuff has been released, more or less. I also, as I mentioned, do coaching training. If you're hearing this in time, there is an early bird until July 31st to sign up for the next round of the Journey Code Coaching Certification Training. And so it's a pretty good savings to jump in earlier rather than later. And we've already got some really great people signing up, and I've got an apprentice, so there's going to be more resources than there was before. I help people to find their sacred purpose and see what their hero's journey is about. What are they here to do, especially now, right? It's pushing up in people. They want to do something. They don't know what to do. They don't know themselves. They haven't felt like they could be authentic in the world. And that is it. Also involves finding your people, who are your natural people that you would maybe, you know, have an assembly with, for example. I also am. All of my law stuff is going into the private. There's a little bit of now, like I might keep my Canadian Court Procedure group in the public as a vetting group, which I don't really like that word, kind of Dean Clifford style, but to see who actually, you know, deserves. No, I'm just kidding. To see who qualifies. I don't. There's no nice way to say it.
I know. I get it.
Right.
You know. But the reason things. For having a PMA is so that you can choose not to allow certain individuals in that you don't find conducive to the overall goal of what you're trying to accomplish or what everybody's trying to accomplish.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be a hardcore place to learn and take action and do stuff. And as I mentioned, the member contributions, so people can be, and you know, bring their gifts and skills to the ministry. They can also, if they want to assist in administering the minister, I'm very open to that because it takes a lot of people to run all these things that I'm planning. And as I mentioned, a couple of workshops coming up already planned and a fellowship meeting. So yeah, this is all happening. There's already the Paul Gauci. I hosted him for a workshop in the back end to talk about food and faith. That was really amazing, this Paul Gauci guy. You should totally have him on, although he can only do the phone. The guy is a recluse. He has no computer, no smartphone, no camera, no nothing. So I had him call into Zoom to do
that. That's worse than Dan the Christian Man. Now, I mean, at least he's upgraded. I think he's upgraded to where he can do some actual interviews now. But yeah, I could figure something out when it comes to things like that. And I mean, I have interviewed people that don't want, even if like they just don't want people to know who they are.
They don't want to be seen. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even just, and I get what you're saying with your PMA about using your full name and not an alias, but I get why some people who are teachers would want to use an alias as to not have any ramifications in their personal life, especially when you've got family. Like as an example for that, KL, the guy that I've interviewed, that's not his name. Most people know that not his name. I mean, who the hell would name their kid KL? now if that's initials for something, that's fine, but that's not even his initials. So it's a complete alias, but I get that. But at the same time, and this is the other thing I would add to it, I know who KL is. And if you deal with people like that and they do have an alias and you're on good terms with them, then there should be no reason that you don't know who the hell they are. I like to be nosy and I'll ask because I don't like dealing with people otherwise, because it just, to me, it's just really fishy. I don't know that I can even trust you and bring you in my house per se without having some sort of trust factor there in some way, and complete anonymity kind of makes that hard unless there's something on the back end. But yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, we're on the same page. Absolutely. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And I thank you so much, Chris. This has been a thoroughly enjoyable conversation. I just
likewise.
Loved it.
Yeah, we definitely got to do it more. So I do appreciate your time. Bear with me 1 second. Just going to do the wrap up. Ladies and gentlemen, be sure to check out everything that we talked about on today's show. Again, if you're not subscribed over at Beth Martin's YouTube channel, make sure you go check it out, as well as BethMartins.com and all the other links that'll be in the video description that we talked about today. If you're not subscribed to my channel, make sure you subscribed, and I will leave you with this. Be blessed, be the change, practice change.
Amen.